the end goal is to create a little bit more empathy and compassion. And so you can do that through asking yourself a question that sounds like, what is the most loving and compassionate thing I can say to myself right now? Like, whether you've gained back some weight or you maybe threw in the towel and you're really in this kind of spin of, you know, defeat and regret and shame, ask yourself, what is the most loving and compassionate thing I can say to myself right now? Like, I think that that is so often not only overlooked, but I don't think that's even in our peripheral. Like, right. Giving ourselves unconditional love is so foreign. But mm-hmm. when you can love yourself unconditionally, like no matter what weight you're at, no matter how many times you've stopped and started a diet, when you can love yourself unconditionally, even if it's for a short amount of time, just notice the kind of mileage that you can get from that feeling.
Hi, I'm Dr. Morgan Nolte, founder of Zivly. As a geriatric physical therapist, I saw the heartbreaking effects of insulin resistance. At Zivly, our mission is to help you prevent and reverse insulin resistance for long-term weight loss and disease prevention through a low insulin and inflammation lifestyle. Each week on this podcast, you'll learn simple, actionable tips to lose weight, keep it off, and get healthy. If you're ready to create a body and life you love, you're in the right place. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Reshape Your Health podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Morgan Nolte, and we have a returning guest today. Her name is Tracy Pleshcourt, and she's the founder of Self Made You and the co-host of the Tracy and Gracie Becoming podcast. She's a certified life coach who helps men and women learn how to think to achieve their goals and overcome the obstacles in their life. Most people have spent their life learning what to think, only to be tested on their ability and memorize. But Tracy dedicates her work to ambitious, lifelong learners, yearning for solutions and seeking for a better way to create the results they deserve and desire. And my friends, this does not come from learning what to do or what to think. It comes from learning how to think, because there's a big difference between knowing what to do and knowing how to do that consistently. And that, I think, is a pivotal key. A light bulb moment when people are like, oh my gosh, I've been knowing what to do for so long, but I'm not doing it. So I think this episode is going to focus on those feelings that always come up when we are going outside of our comfort zone to change behaviors, to reach those big goals. And those feelings are overwhelm, frustration, disappointment, depression, suppressed anger. And I think that sometimes we want to pretend like those feelings aren't there, but let's be honest, they are. And I want this episode to be a resource that you can come back to over and over and over again when you want to give up, when it feels too hard, when you feel like you're in this by yourself and you're all alone. Tracy and I are with you, and we want you to know that there is hope, that you can do this and you can do hard things. So wherever you're at in your health journey today, I hope this is an inspiration and maybe even a little bit of a kick in the pants to keep moving forward. So Tracy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be back. I'm so happy to come back and share a little bit more knowledge. And I love the fact that you've pointed out that this can be a resource. Like, that's the beauty of podcasts, right? It's like you can kind of tuck them away, put them in your back pocket, and come back and utilize them and kind of remind yourself of what it is that you want to be believing, right? I have to remind myself all the time of the things that I want to be believing.
Yes. And for those who missed your first episode, we're going to link that up in the show notes. That one is all about how to improve self-control. And that one got a lot of really glowing reviews from our members. They really appreciated your insight, and I know they're going to love this one. But yes, I'm excited to dig into this. I want this to be like, we're having a cup of coffee. We're both excellent coaches, and we want to share insights and kind of give people a little bit of the behind the scenes on how we deal with certain things, how we coach people through certain things, how we coach ourselves through certain things. But I know some of my favorite podcast episodes are those more encouraging type of episodes, not like a, tell me what to do, but tell me I can do it type of thing.
Amen. I am right there with you. Those are all the ones that I have saved in my podcast app as well.
You know, because sometimes it can feel like a lonely journey, like either building a business or building a healthy lifestyle. We have some members who are just in toxic environments, whether it's home or their work. And, you know, sometimes that solitude on the walk or on their commute with a podcast with someone who is doing what they want to do, who's vibrating at a higher vibration. It's like, give me that through osmosis because I'm not getting that anywhere else in my life.
Right.
And I think that's the power of podcasting is we can really help people change their thoughts, even if we're not right there with them. So we're right there with you today, wherever you're listening. So Tracy, let's start with a question. What do you think causes people to give up on their ideal health? Let's start there.
Yeah. So I think that we have to remember that there is this past version of ourself, and then there's this present version of ourself, and then there's this future version of ourself. And so much of what we do right now is very connected to our past. And so I think it's very human of all of us to look back at our past to decide what we're actually capable of, instead of looking at the future self, who we might have already decided where she is, what she's already achieved, what it is that she's thinking, feeling, and behaving as, and letting that influence how we're going to act today. So I think it's really a kind of a thought pattern, a fear-based thought pattern that leads us to quitting. I think those thoughts sound an awful lot like, you know, I've never been able to lose weight and keep it off. Therefore, I'm never going to be able to lose weight and keep it off. Or I'm afraid of what other people are going to think. I don't trust myself to be able to be in environments, you know, that, you know, I've never been in at this weight, right? Like, I think that there's a very deep, strong connection to our past, our primitive brain that's offering us a lot of fear-based narratives, you know, is unfortunately really kind of driving the ship. And we aren't questioning those narratives. We aren't asking ourselves better questions that lead us to a different way of thinking. So it's really easy to reactively quit, especially if that's the pattern that has happened so many times before, and you believe that there's no possibility of creating anything new. And so that's my mission in life, is to teach people about the possibility and how you can learn to think different. And it has nothing to do with your ability to lose weight. It has everything to do with how you are thinking about every single circumstance in your life.
Yeah. And I think having that clear vision of who you want to become is really helpful, but a commonly overlooked step in this process. Everyone, they might be like, tell me what to eat, tell me how to exercise, give me this meal plan. And I'm like, let's give you a thought plan too, because otherwise this meal plan is going to get, you know, thrown in the garbage.
Right.
So I think that that's a really good place to start. You touched on something there. You said they're not asking themselves the better questions. Right. And what are some of those better questions that people can use to interrupt that pattern of maybe quitting, maybe backsliding? You know, maybe they're like, oh, I'm just going to go off my plan here. And then they kind of end up off track for like 6 weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
So what are these better questions that we can start to ask ourselves to avoid that self-sabotage?
Yeah. So the end goal is to create a little bit more empathy and compassion. And so you can do that through asking yourself a question that sounds like, what is the most loving and compassionate thing I can say to myself right now? Like, whether you've gained back some weight or you maybe threw in the towel and you're really in this kind of spin of, you know, defeat and regret and shame. Ask yourself, what is the most loving and compassionate thing I can say to myself right now? Like, I think that that is so often not only overlooked, but I don't think that's even in our peripheral. Like giving ourselves unconditional love is so foreign. But when you can love yourself unconditionally, like no matter what weight you're at, no matter how many times you've stopped and started a diet, when you can love yourself unconditionally, even if it's for a short amount of time, just notice the kind of mileage that you can get from that feeling of compassion for yourself, empathy for yourself. So that's a great question to be asking yourself. Another one that I would challenge your audience to ask is, like, what are all of the factors that, you know, might be at play here that I'm not seeing because I'm so laser focused on this one belief? Like, I've never been able to lose weight. Therefore, this is just another example of that. What if you took off those like blinders that has you so laser focused on that one thought, that sabotaging thought, and started to ask yourself, like, what are some of the factors that I might not be seeing that are maybe at play? Like, are there hormones that are contributing to my lack of weight loss or my lack of motivation? Is there, you know, am I more tired right now? Like more tired than usual? What is my sleep pattern like? You know, is there, gut health issues? Is there, I always ask myself, like, what's contributing or what's interfering? I love asking myself, like, what are the other factors that I might not be seeing because I'm so bought and sold on this one belief that is really holding me captive?
So, okay, those are really good. I want you to elaborate a little bit more on, you know, if someone is at that feeling of like, oh, I just want to give up. I think a lot of that is due to overwhelm. And it's like, they kind of get that paralysis by analysis, and they listen to these podcasts, maybe they take courses or they read books, and they have all this information floating around in their head, and it causes overwhelm, and then they never actually act on any of it.
Yeah. So
how do you deal with that?
Yeah. So if you're trying to actually take steps, like actually trying to make forward movement from overwhelm, it's going to backfire on you.
Tell me more. Yeah.
So the progress that you actually make is probably not going to be long lasting. So if you are somebody who's like, okay, I'm feeling desperate or I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'm going to go back to the list of foods that I should be eating and just start to like kind of white knuckling my way through it. I hate these foods, but I'm going to just do it. Right. Or I'm going to like, get on the treadmill for and hate all 45 minutes of my walk on that treadmill, because whatever, people can get through 45 minutes of anything, right? That's going to be the line of thinking. And you're actually taking action from a place of overwhelm, which I promise you is not going to create sustainable results, because that feeling is going to be remembered. And it's so unlikely that you're going to want to go back to those actions because they're associated with an unwanted feeling. So that's kind of the psychology of it. Now, what I would suggest is if you have some actions that you know have worked in the past and you're, you know, pretty sure that they're effective, and you're like, you know, I did lose weight when I took these actions, when I ate off of that list of foods only. That's great. Those are what I call best practices. And there's always a time and a place for best practices. But I want to make sure that those best practices, those actions that you're taking are actually being fueled from a feeling that's going to be sustainable. So if you're taking actions from a place of overwhelm, then you are actually going to maybe experience a short-term like result that you want, but you're going to go right back to it because overwhelm is not a sustainable like source of fuel to keep you motivated. Right. So what I want you to do is I want you to go back and ask yourself, like, what is the belief that's causing the overwhelm in the first place? You always want to get to the root cause. Otherwise, you're just band-aiding, right? So, so connecting the dots back to what is it that I'm believing that's actually causing the overwhelm? This is hard. this is impossible. It's never worked for me in the past. There's just way too many things that I need to know. Like
I have to figure this out right now. I think urgency goes hand in hand with overwhelm, at least from my own life. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk with you a little bit more about the nuances, because maybe people aren't resonating. Like maybe they're like, yeah, I'm overwhelmed, but I'm always overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So it's not a big deal. You know, I'm overwhelmed in everything, my work, my relationships. This is just another thing. But for me, it often comes up as urgency. And I was curious, how does it come up in your life? How do you start to recognize, oh, I think that there's a belief going on here that's causing me to experience overwhelm, fear, anxiety? Because I definitely have some tools, but I want to hear what you have first.
Yeah. So this really does require you to be able to like almost articulate what it is that you're feeling in the moment. Like this requires you to like get connected, to almost get a little intimate with your feelings. And so this is where I lose a lot of men right here. When I say we've got to get connected to your feelings, they're like, I'm out. Yeah. But
some don't. We definitely have. I'm thinking of one member, especially, you know who you are, and he is so vulnerable and honest. And I really appreciate when men are, because it's more rare, you know?
I agree. And I have men in my program too, who they are such like great examples of, you know, people who are willing to roll up their sleeves and do the work mm-hmm. with, because they are willing to be vulnerable mm-hmm. and they actually are willing to like see the possibility in doing something different. So they are somebody who's never gotten in touch with their feelings, and they're at kind of this crossroads where they're like, well, it would make sense that I've got to do something different. And so let's get in touch with our feelings. And so I really like to encourage people to start with a bigger vocabulary of feelings. Like most of us name the, you know, top five, you know, happy, mad, sad, right? Like we can spew those out so easily, but there is a massive amount of emotions that when you actually can pinpoint what it is that you're feeling, it's amazing how you start to like reconnect with yourself. Oh, I'm feeling this way. I'm feeling maybe the word is overwhelmed because I'm thinking this. But unfortunately, unless you can actually articulate what it is that you're feeling, it's very hard to make the connection back to the root cause, mm-hmm. the thought that's creating it. So that's a very simple step, is just Google feelings wheel, Google feelings chart, and get the list of emotions, the spectrum of emotions, so that you can look at it and find what it is that you are actually feeling. So that is an awareness technique. And now when you have become aware, you are actually outside of the primitive brain that's, you know, offering you these fear-based thoughts. Because if you have no awareness or you can't name it, you're actually in more of like a confusion state. You're in a overwhelm state. It feels very out of control. Just that simple act of naming it with intention and kind of connecting to it has you operating from your prodigy brain, your prefrontal cortex, which now you can tap into the empathy, the discovery, the innovation that's going to allow you to start asking better questions, which lead to better answers, which lead to feelings that are going to drive different behaviors. So it always starts, you know, you got to go back to that root cause. What is it that you're feeling, and name it? So probably not what you were expecting as an answer, but it's such an easy like step to take. And it really does yield some nice results for people. They start to feel like they better understand themselves simply by understanding what it is that they're feeling in this moment.
I have a couple of things to unpack here. So first is, one thing I tell myself every morning is total emotional awareness and mastery. Because I do believe that being present to your body is so powerful so that you're not in a reactive state and you're not adding fuel to some fire that's going on, whether it's work or relationally. It's like, if you don't practice being present to your own emotions, mm-hmm. you can't show up as your full authentic version of yourself because you're always suppressing something.
Right.
The other thing that I thought of was, I bet there's a lot of people out there growing up who weren't permitted to have certain emotions.
Right. Right.
Don't you think that that manifests in adulthood?
Oh,
and they then mask them with food or alcohol or other maladaptive coping mechanisms. Can you speak to that a little bit?
For sure. Yeah. So that primitive brain of ours is the stronger part of our brain because it's been utilized the most. It's just like any other muscle. Like if you are somebody who's constantly lifting something heavy, your bicep is going to be stronger. So that part of your brain that has, you know, been stimulated and is offering you these fear-based thoughts in an attempt to keep you safe when you're actually not in any danger, it's been overused and almost abused. And it is the stronger part. So it's being used by default. And so those thoughts that it's actually creating, they are fear-based, but you sometimes want to ask yourself, like, but where are they coming from? Why do I believe that? So sometimes, you know, it's the messaging that we've been exposed to. We've been indoctrinated into, like, you know, boys don't cry.
Yeah. Suck it up.
How many times have these men heard that? They've heard it more times than it's actually been said because they're hearing it in their head. Boys mm-hmm. don't cry, right? Or boys don't show their emotions, or they don't get touchy feeling, or they don't get connected with their feelings. And so it makes perfect sense that as an adult, they stay away from that because that has now become a belief. So when you can kind of be open to the fact that you've been exposed to messaging, like either through social media, through authority figures, through your culture, and just now start asking yourself, is it a helpful belief for me to carry forward? Like sometimes you don't have to ask, is it right? Or is it wrong? Or is it good? Or is it bad? Ask yourself, is it helpful? Like, I'm somebody who wants to be losing weight. Is that a helpful thought for me to be believing now? And if mm-hmm. the answer is no, now you can start to kind of question it. Well, what else might be true?
Yeah. I was also thinking, you know, going back to, were they allowed to believe that, or were they allowed to express that emotion, is going back to someone's parents' emotional capacity to help them process what they're going through.
Right.
I mean, I think the more and more I learn about behavior, the more I'm convinced that so much of it starts in childhood. All of these subconscious beliefs are in, you know, given to us. We get them through osmosis. And I want you to just think back to your mom or your dad. And it's like, if you were having a hard time, how did they react to that? Did they show you empathy and compassion? Or were they harsh with you? Or were they busy with your other siblings? Or were they busy with their own problems that they didn't really have time to express that empathy and compassion? And if you didn't learn it from your parents, where do you learn it from?
Right. And there's so many like forms of messaging. Like there's indirect and direct. So you might have the parent that says, you know, suck it up, mm-hmm. or don't cry about that, or, you know, like, be strong. But you also might have the parent who doesn't say that, but actually doesn't hold space for you
exactly
to process it. And so
exactly.
there's, you know, you had that experience, and then you made that experience mean something that you've carried forward, right? So there may be indirect messaging happening too, that I just want to kind of shine a light on. And there is no problem with the fact that you have been exposed to those messages, that you've carried those thoughts and actually created beliefs from them. The good news is today you're noticing them, and today mm-hmm. you're questioning them. And today you can decide that that belief is no longer helpful. And you can now take the next step and actually question it and ask yourself, what else might be true?
I love what you said about holding space. I think that's the perfect visual for this whole thing. And I was wondering, like, do you have an example from your own life of someone who held space for you? And because I think if no one teaches us well, what does that look like to hold space? How are we expected to hold space for our own emotions?
Right, right.
Do you have an example from your life that you'd like to share about someone holding space for you and you really receiving that empathy and compassion so that you could then kind of learn how to give that to yourself?
Yeah. You know, sadly, as a child, I don't recall any of those times. And I do think that that's ultimately what led to my overeating patterns and eventually to my overdrinking patterns, because I didn't know how to process my feelings. And so I turned to ways to numb it. And food and alcohol were two really great ways for me to numb those feelings. Those were my coping techniques. And it actually wasn't until I reached out for more professional help that I actually had space held for me to just be able to allow feelings. I had no idea that that was even, you know, available to me, to just allow feelings to be there without trying to run away from them, without trying to distract myself from them or to buffer them or to numb them, just to sit with it and to be told that that's a total normal behavior. That's a very normal human response to have, like to feel overwhelmed when you're a mom that actually holds down, you know, maybe you're the mom and you're the breadwinner and, you know, all of the other responsibilities, and it feels like it's all coming at you. Feeling overwhelmed is very normal, you know, and it wasn't until I realized how normal it was because the professional held space for me to just feel it and to actually connect with it, to ask me things like, where do you feel this in your body? What does it feel like? Having me explain it, having me, you know, first and foremost, being able to articulate what the feeling was, it goes right back to that first step of being able to specifically articulate what it is, and then connecting with it on a different level, like, what does it feel like and where is it showing up? That is an exercise that is so effective in processing an emotion, or, you know, allowing you to cry or to experience the sweaty palms or the, you know, flushed face or the, you know, it's like all of that again is so normal. And I used to make that mean that, you know, I used to judge myself for it and kind of layer on a level of unnecessary suffering. I was already in pain, but then I would layer on the judgment that brought it to a level of, I would say, kind of an unnecessary suffering type level. So holding space came in a time where now I look back at my past, you know, the fact that I didn't have any sort of authority figure or parental figure in my life that knew how to help me process feelings is today such a gift. Because I value that so much. And I bring that forward in my personal life and into my children's experience. And of course, into my clients' experience. And I personally believe that you experience life through your feelings. And so it's really important to be in touch with those feelings, the unwanted and the wanted, and to remember that you have a choice when you are feeling the unwanted. You don't have to just accept that. I would highly recommend allowing it to be there. But then that next step after the allowance is asking yourself, you know, do I want to feel something different? Am I ready to feel something different? And that kind of cracks the door open into operating from that other part of your brain where you can start to make progress, but not before you stay in that driver's seat and you make the choice or the decision that you want to feel something different. All emotions are meant to be felt.
Yeah. I kind of go back to a belief that was instilled on me that it's more important how I make other feel, how others feel around me than how I feel around other people. And you can imagine what that played out as.
Right.
You
know, a lot of people pleasing.
A lot of people pleasing. That actually came from my mom, who's a successful lawyer. but people in her life kind of resented her for it. Like, oh, well, you have, you know, kid, the smart kids, and you have the career and you're married and all this stuff. And so she really learned to downplay her light and taught me that, to kind of to downplay mine, to make other people more comfortable with their own insecurities. Mm-hmm. And, what I realized was I was suppressing a lot of emotion to avoid making other people feel uncomfortable with my truth. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably happens a lot in marriages where the women, like you said, want to express their emotions. They want to be heard. And the man's like, I don't know. I can't go there emotionally with you. And so I know for me personally, my girlfriends have really been in such a beautiful place where we hold space for each other in a different way, you know? And so I think if you don't have a girlfriend or a friend or a spouse who can hold space for you to let you be your full authentic self and love you unconditionally, find one if you can. But I think that's a really great opportunity, like you said, to get some counseling, to just get the help that you need, because losing weight and getting healthy is an inside out job. And if we don't learn how to compassionately and lovingly deal with our uncomfortable emotions in a productive way, you're going to continue to fall back into these eating habits, drinking habits, et cetera. And so I think that was just kind of one example from my own life of really experiencing a belief that affected my ability to be honest with myself and others, because I didn't want to make them uncomfortable with my anger or my insecurity or my depression. And so I just kind of, the expression, oh, everything's fine. Like feelings I'm not expressing. I think we all know someone who's like, oh yeah, I'm fine. And you're like, you're not fine. I know you're not fine. So can you talk a little bit about how that may backfire for people that are having some insecurity? Maybe they are having some anger, or they're having some regret or guilt. Mm-hmm. If those feelings aren't addressed, how can they backfire?
Yeah. Well, so the behaviors or the actions that you're taking are, again, they're being fueled by a primitive brain belief, a fear-based belief. So you will be in reactive mode instead of a response mode. You'll notice that things feel very urgent. You'll notice that the end result is often not what you want it to be. So I would say, again, if you can get really clear and notice, you know, or become more aware of when you're feeling those feelings, there's nothing wrong with that, but that's the moment when you want to intercept and you want to be questioning the thoughts that are creating that feeling so that you're intercepting before it all unfolds. So I also like to think, so if we kind of go back to that example that you gave with your mom, the 2.0 work now is asking yourself questions around, you know, if your mom had any idea of how her behavior, either her indirect or even direct messaging or communication, made you feel, or how that had you behaving as an adult, you know, would she have ever chosen to do that? You know, really finding, kind of asking yourself questions that create a level of empathy and compassion mm-hmm. for her, because that empathy and compassion is going to be way more available to you when you can find that for her. So if you are somebody who recognizes that you are feeling angry or resentful towards somebody, you want to quickly better understand them by asking yourself some questions like that, you know, if they had any idea how that would have made me feel, would they have still done that? You know, what might be the factors, you know, that I'm not seeing? We get so laser focused. What does your future self have to tell you about her behavior back then, right? Because your future self is so much more wise, has been through so many more experiences, and can provide that kind of intel that maybe right now in this moment is unavailable to you. So again, asking yourself those kind of questions is going to be really helpful. Recognizing the emotions that you're being fueled from, any of those unwanted fear-based thoughts have to be intercepted, you know, sooner than later. Otherwise, the reactive behavior is going to play out, and that's going to have you doing things like, you know, overeating, overdrinking, overspending, you know, under-earning, all of the things that most of us adults would rather not, you know, pay the kind of consequences for.
Yeah, I think all of that was great. It brought up a thought in my head about reaching our potential. And like, I think that growing up, I don't know why, it's almost like, I think, especially as women, like we're not complete until we find a partner. Mm-hmm. And so I think, how can we instill a stronger sense of self-confidence when we either don't have the support of our partner, let's say for getting healthy, or they're second guessing you? Because that's my personal pet peeve, and my husband knows it. It's like, whenever you say something that implies that I'm not capable of doing something, that makes me so angry. And so I just want to prove him wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of women, when they're out to lose weight, when they're out to get healthy, they encounter resistance from their partner. Like, are you sure you want to do that again, honey? And sometimes I think it's because it makes their partner emotionally uncomfortable, mm-hmm. because when it doesn't work, quote unquote, or when they lose it and then they regain it, the emotional backlash comes back on the partner who doesn't have the bandwidth or the emotional space to hold,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
for their partner. So how would you encourage someone who wants to lose weight but isn't necessarily feeling supported to keep moving forward despite people maybe not believing in her?
Yeah. So I do think that the step that's going to really pay some dividends is trying to understand where that other person might be coming from. So what are they afraid of? Right? When you ask yourself that question, is it they're afraid of, you know, the money that might be spent? Are they afraid of the attention that you might be getting? Are they afraid of, you know, health repercussions that, you know, I know people who are big believers in fasting, but their spouse is like,
oh, right.
Oh my gosh, that's starvation, right? So
right.
There's a legit concern, a legit fear that it would be really helpful if you had more of an understanding, more context around just the fact that you have this belief that they don't support me, right? So mm-hmm. really asking yourself, what are they afraid of? Because their primitive brain is probably like being hijacked and they are in that reactive mode. And so just understanding all of their humanness, and if you can actually respond and you're actually operating from the part of your brain that allows you to tap into, you know, empathy and discovery and even innovation, that when you're activating that part of your brain, it's actually a contagion. So you're going to start to see them kind of rising up and you're going to notice that your exchanges look a lot different. But think about this. They react, you react, then they react, and then you react, and it becomes a dumpster fire quite quickly.
And someone's sleeping on the couch.
Uh-huh, exactly. And so you want to be the person that, you know, through kind of this ongoing strengthening awareness, utilizing this prodigy part of your brain where you can respond knowing that that's the contagion. And so they're going to kind of rise up and meet you, and the communication, the interaction is going to look a lot different. And you can simply achieve that by asking, like, what are they reacting to? What are they afraid of? What are the primitive brain thoughts that they might be hearing? it's so incredibly helpful to go there and to have empathy and compassion and start looking at, you know, what else might be at play. And then secondly, I would also challenge you to maybe not be so black and white in your thinking, like, you know, he's not going to support me, so I'm going to do it anyways, or he's not going to support me, so I'm going to do it in secret, right? Like, that's really kind of black and white thinking. How about, he doesn't support me right now, but it's possible that, you know, over time, he'll better understand. And so I'm going to take this one step. So I guess that's kind of a two-part kind of tip for you, but recognize when you have this black and white thinking that's, you know, very absolute. Secondly, ask yourself, like, what is the one step? What's the next best step that I can take that is almost so easy, it's hard not to do? Because our brain, our primitive brain, likes us to believe that we have to know the whole plan. We have to know how this is all going to unfold. We have to know how he's going to be finally getting on board, what I'm going to do, how fast I'm going to lose the weight, you know, how soon I'm going to be at my goal weight, and, you know, what college my kids are going to go to. You got to have it all figured out. And that's not true. And that right there is a sabotaging belief, where in reality, all you have to know is, what is the next best step? Like, maybe it's just telling him what my intentions are, or just telling him why I think this time is going to be different, or what it is that I've learned. One step that is so easy right now in this moment that it's almost comical or hard not to do. So that's my advice for that scenario.
I think that takes a lot of emotional maturity too, to put, it's almost like, okay, I'm holding these emotions of frustration. I have a couple thoughts here, at a lack of support, for example, but I'm going to put those aside right now and put myself in your head and see what fears you have. But the other thing, I don't know if you talk about this with your clients, is non-attachment. And so I think a lot of resistance comes up when we are attached to things. Mm-hmm. So when someone's attached to the way that they think their spouse should respond when they say, I'm going to start a new plan or whatever, and they don't respond that way, and they're like, oh, well, he's not supporting me. It's like, well, if you didn't have the expectation that he should support you at all, then you wouldn't be disappointed.
Right.
You know, or for example, oh man, you know, I was going to lose 4 pounds this month and I only lost one. And it's like, well, that's on you for being disappointed, because you're the one that's attached to the expectation that you're supposed to lose 4 pounds in a month. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about detaching our expectation, like detaching ourselves from our expectations, and how that can actually lead to a lot of personal freedom and power?
Yeah. The antidote to being attached to outcomes is really looking at how far you've come. Instead of looking at how far you have to go, it's taking kind of that from where I'm at right now and looking backwards at how far you've come, and really appreciating, like, the steps that may have been a little bit harder have really afforded you kind of this new way of thinking. You've had harder steps that have, like, created contrast for you and created an experience that now you can point back to and recognize resilience. So it's really kind of taking your focus off of the finish line, the outcome that you so desperately want, and really, like, refocusing, reframing it as, you know, how far I've come, and really, focusing on the steps that have led you, even the contrasting steps, even the steps that didn't feel good, as a gift and an opportunity that has led you to where you're at. When you're looking at it that way, when you reframe it in that kind of context, you strip away that need to attach to an outcome, and you start recognizing that, you know, happiness does not have to be reserved for the finish line. Happiness is available to me right now, and I can prove that to myself through just taking this next step, asking myself, you know, in what ways was that experience perfect? In what ways was that a gift? How did I benefit? How did I become the next best version of myself? And letting that fuel you to just keep focusing on the steps, the next best step, and getting that focus off of the outcomes.
Do you think that humans are wired for negativity? Because oh my gosh, like if we were a world where everyone just woke up and they're like, I am grateful for this and this and this and this, and I am so excited about this today, and I can't wait to do this. And then at the end of the day, we talk about the 98% of things that went right instead of the 2% of things that went wrong. This world would be a totally different place.
Yeah. My thoughts on that. Yeah. I don't know if I would say we're wired for that. I would just say that the part of our brain that offers us those fear-based thoughts, those very reactive thoughts that have us focusing on all the things that could have went wrong or did go wrong or the speculation, you know, that's the part of our brain that is stronger. It needed to be the strongest part of our, you know, brain when we were in a primitive state because it was all about survival. Well, now as we've evolved, we aren't in a lot of danger and it's not that hard to survive. And so, but that part of our brain is the strongest part. So it's almost like a default way of operating. So what I want people to understand is that through this commitment to strengthening the other part of your brain, that can become the strongest part. And by default, you are operating from. So there's so much hope, but it really does start with an awareness of why it's actually happening. It's not because you're broken. Yeah. That's literally just the way that, you know, you've been operating. And of course, it makes sense that that's the stronger part of your brain. But, you know, through kind of a commitment of, you know, mental fitness, and that isn't anything hard. It doesn't even require you to drive anywhere. It's literally a commitment to staying aware of how it is that you are feeling and why. Like, that's it. Like, if you believe that it's got to be harder than that, then I'm just going to suggest that you believe that no pain, no gain, you know, everything has to be hard. That's not true. It could be that easy of just staying aware, like caring more about how you feel and caring less about having to be right about the beliefs that you have is the solution to living a very happy, satisfied life in the moment and disconnecting from those outcomes. So that's my mantra. You shared your mantra. My mantra is I care more about how I feel than caring about being right, because my primitive brain is going to all day, every day, offer me all sorts of fear-based, very dramatic thoughts, because nobody's going to take that part of my brain out of my head. It's going to be there, but I'm not going to react to it because I'm so in touch with how it is that I'm feeling. I'm so laser focused on that versus making those primitive brain thoughts like become a truth. They aren't the truth. They're very dramatic thoughts. Yeah. And I'm not going to look for evidence to prove them right. I'm going to stay right here caring about how I feel. And that becomes a solution that is so easy and it changes everything. We have a planner that we've been teaching people how to use. It's just a daily planner. And the emphasis, even though the results are higher productivity, achievement of impossible goals, things that you once thought impossible, and creating a more satisfied life, day and life, is the emphasis is not on the tasks that are hitting your hours, you know, at the 9 o'clock hour or the 5 o'clock hour. It's not on the task. It's not even really staying organized. The emphasis is on how you're feeling while you are doing those tasks. And the key is making a decision ahead of time, staying in that place of feeling empowered, feeling like you have a choice, feeling like you are in control of your life, so that when you put, you know, 3 o'clock, I'm going to be the guest on Dr. Morgan's podcast. When that hits my daily planner, I take it one step, actually two steps further and I ask myself, how do I want to feel while I am actually doing that task, while I am involved with that commitment? And what is the belief or what is the thought I have to be thinking to feel that way? That's what it looks like to actually take control. And so we've had a lot of success with our weight loss clients, the people who are really wanting a different approach to, you know, metabolic fitness. It's really mental fitness first, strengthening their mental fitness by staying aware, by making decisions ahead of time about how it is that you want to feel and really emphasizing the feelings.
Yep. And the thought that will produce that. I like that. So I think we're just about out of time, but just to give a really practical example for someone who has the agenda on their, you know, week to go to the gym or to exercise, don't just put it on your schedule. That's great. What gets scheduled gets done, but also decide, how do I want to feel when I'm working out? How do I want to feel when I'm heading to work out? Do I want to feel excited? Do I want to feel empowered? Do I want to feel proud of myself? And then choose the thought that you're going to think. Isn't that interesting? And I was just thinking, I'm looking at my Google Cal. You can make little notes, you know, as you're putting in appointments into your calendar in the description. If you really want to take this to the next level, say feeling energized, focused, present, thought, I'm really excited for this conversation. I know this is going to be valuable for my community. I love that. That's an excellent tip to end on. So thank you so much for your time today. And can you please let the listeners know where they can learn more about you?
Yes. So our website is www.self-made, and then it's the letter U.com. And we can, from there, we can point you in the direction of all of our social media channels, but you'll also find registration for our free Coaching Fridays and our master classes. And we do take you by the hand and teach you how to use the day planner to really, you know, create a self-made day. And we like to tell people it's exactly how you would plan out your perfect day. And it's all about making decisions ahead of time. So we invite everyone to come learn how to create their self-made day.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Tracy. It was a delight talking with you again, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Reshape Your Health podcast today. To learn more about Zivli, our online course and coaching program to reverse insulin resistance for long-term weight loss and disease prevention, check out our website at www.zivli.com. That's Zivli.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a rating and review on your listening platform and share it with a friend. I'll talk with you at the same time, same place next week. Bye for now.